Powerful Radio is pleased to present Church of the Masses with award-winning Catholic columnist, screenwriter, and media consultant, Barbara Nicolosi.
And here we are again. Welcome to Church of the Masses on the Virgin Most Powerful Radio Network. It's great to have you back with us. This is kind of a very special show. I don't think anybody else in Christendom does what we do, or in outside of Christendom, which is basically we talk about the intersection of faith and culture. So the idea here is things that news of the culture and the media that are interested to people of faith. And so I try to talk about them from my weird double perspective as a filmmaker, producer, writer, and a someone who is also an academic, and then someone who is also a very committed Catholic. So the idea is, let's try to not just curse the darkness that's out there in culture and media, but instead try to find things to celebrate and to find to learn from people who are making media from the standpoint of faith, particularly their Catholic faith. If they have a lens of a Catholic, then we're particularly interested in that. So anyway, so that's what we do here. We talk about it every week, and I'm very grateful to Terry Barber and the people here at Virgin Most Powerful Radio for asking me to do this show. So we usually launch in right away with news of the week that's interesting to people of culture, people of faith about the culture. So with that in mind, I've kind of been looking to see what would be of interest to us this week. And it's always tough this time of year, the end of the summer, kind of a weird part. The only other time that's like it in Hollywood is January, where everybody's at Sundance. The end of the summer, kind of the TV shows are ramping up. Everybody's furiously in breaking stories, and anybody in television is kind of out of AWOL. And then the movie business, everyone's kind of still on vacation. So it's kind of a quiet thing, but there is a lot of stuff brewing. So anyway, I thought I would discuss a couple things. So one of them in the news this week is this show, Righteous Gemstones, which maybe you've heard about. It's going to be an HBO series, and it's coming from Danny McBride, who did a series called Vice Principals and Eastbound and Down. So the new one is called The Righteous Gemstones, which the description says it follows an opulent megachurch family. He's saying, quote, that the goal isn't to be a takedown of everything. He says, when Hollywood takes on religion, they make the mistake too often of lampooning one's belief. He says, for us, it's about lampooning hypocrites. So he contends that he has an aunt who is a minister in a Protestant church somewhere, evangelical church, and so he wants to make something that will be entertaining for her. But already we get the sense that this is going to be a show about hypocrites in the world of evangelical megachurchdom. And I don't know if I trust HBO to do this fairly and to do it kind of in a lighthearted way, the way, you know, like Home Improvement lampooned people in the in the home improvement television arena, you know, but it did so with love and affection. I don't think you're going to have the same thing here at all. The fact is that my sense of a lot of people out here is that anybody who's Christian is a hypocrite. So it's kind of making this distinction that they're only going to be lampooning hypocrite Christians on this new show, Righteous Gemstones, and not all Christians. I don't know if I trust them. Having said that, it is interesting that they found the need to say right off the bat that they're, you know, what they're not going to be doing. Interestingly, one of the stars of the show is a guy named, I'm trying to find his name here, Adam Devine. And he says that he was raised Catholic and was jealous of his friends who went to mega churches because they had rock climbing walls and video games, and all we had was a hard bench. So there's another obviously spiritually sensitive individual who's part of this program. So anyway, this is HBO, and they are now setting their lens on evangelicals and megachurches to go after. So we'll see what that turns into. There's another one that a lot of people are excited about, and it's Joss Whedon's new show. So Joss has a huge following among sci-fi people and beyond, really. You know, this is the guy who created, among other things, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And so, you know, he's famous for so much, you know, so many projects on the sci-fi side. So his new project is called The Nevers, and it's a very odd pitch, really. It's a sci-fi drama series set in the Victorian era. So one imagines it would have to be probably in England. I don't know, because it'd be odd to talk about Victorians in America. But anyway, the Victorian era, and it's about women superheroes. So women superheroes who are Victorian era women, and this is Joss Whedon's new show, and he's doing it with Jane Espenson and Doug Petrie, both of whom he did Buffy with. So everyone's excited about this, and it's a massive cast, The Nevers. And the pitch, you know, it's just over and over. I mean, there's some stuff in it right away. You say, why bother setting this in a Victorian era? They have things like a pansexual posh boy, you know, et cetera. So I'm looking at the list of characters, and I'm like, why the Victorian thing? It seems to me it just jacks up the price. But I think that what's going on here is the desire to do a show that features women, right? Everybody is wanting this right now because we're in the Me Too post-era. And so everyone is trying to pitch shows that have women as the lead. And so what better to do than to say, you know, all those women in Victorian era who look like they were kind of being stifled by the culture and the times and the politics and by, you know, their evil husbands, actually they're really, you know, crazed postmoderns, feminists, and we're now going to watch them, you know, beat the heck out of nefarious white European males. So anyway, so that's one that, you know, I'd hope higher hopes for Joss. You know, I actually spent a day once picketing next to Joss and talking to him about my opinions of Battlestar Galactica. Goes back to the writer's strike a few years ago. And it's funny because I didn't know he was him. At the time, I didn't recognize him, and we just ended up next to each other. And afterwards, someone said to me, so what did Joss have to say to you two while you were talking? And I was like, what? You know, they were like, you were walking with Joss Whedon. So he's a big, you know, huge kind of star out here. And then a certain circle, you know, like at Comic-Con, that comic book festival they have every year that just got over this past weekend, you know, he's like a god. So anyway, I am a big fan of Joss, but I don't know about this show coming out. And it seems to me just pandering to the time. So there's another story out there, which is interesting. So, you know, I don't know if any of you follow, but so the second biggest movie in the theaters is called Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and it's Tarantino's latest entry. And it's a funny kind of thing because it's set during the Charlie Manson murders, right before the Charles Manson murders hit Hollywood. And the premise is, you know, ha-ha, isn't it funny? These people get in kind of the middle and they thwart one of the Charles Manson murders a whole bunch of other people get slaughtered. Of course, it's a Tarantino movie. Now, one could talk about the questionable judgment of making a comedy, even a dark one, set in the Charles Manson murders, set with the background of the Charles Manson murders. I mean, it's been 50 years, but are we ready to laugh about what they did to those people? I don't know if we are. I don't think we are. But that's Tarantino for you, trying to find, you know, he did Inglorious Bastards. It's about, you know, haha, aren't the Nazis funny? And now... now here he is with the Manson murder. So it's kind of like looks for the most spectacular thing he can find obnoxiously. But he is a very talented filmmaker visually. You've got to give him that. And in terms of pacing, I think he's very, very good. And But what happened this week that's kind of interesting is apparently one of the throwaways in the movie is they have many encounters with people in that moment of Hollywood, and that's the big kind of attraction of the movie is all the cameos. They're not real. The people playing the actors from the past. And so one of them is Bruce Lee. They have someone play Bruce Lee. And apparently they kind of fall into Asian caricatures there. And so his daughter, Bruce Lee's daughter, really came out angrily at the attack on her father, that her father was made to be an object of scorn as an obnoxious Asian kind of prima donna. So Tarantino's kind of taking flack from the left here in his portrayal of Bruce Lee in this unflattering light. It seems to me that one of the things that's going on right now, and I've talked about this before in the arts, is that political correctness is such a kind of crazed, out of control, cannon. It fires, what was it, the kind of cannon that fired grape shot. You know, it doesn't fire a cannonball, it fires grape shot. And that means it comes at you from all different directions. And so even the left doesn't know where the fire is going to come from. I think this is terrible for the arts. Okay, well, stay tuned. We're going to have Megan Harrington back in our second and third segments, and we're going to talk about her new project and what it is to be a producer and how to get started here in Hollywood. Stay tuned. This is Barbara Nicolosi from Church of the Master. Hi, this is Barbara Nicolosi, and we're having a women's conference here at the Sacred Heart Chapel in Covina on September 7th, 2019. This is going to be a great, great day for you to come and meet a bunch of new friends, wonderful Catholic women who want to deepen their Catholic faith and their understanding of themselves as women. You know, this era right now that we're in, so much confusion. What is it to be a man? What is it to be a woman? You know, the Catholic Church has a lot to say about this, and we're going to hear about them. We're going to hear about John Paul II's letter on women that he wrote from Mary Danielle Barber. She's going to talk about that. She's going to talk about Mary as a model for all of us. It's a topic that we can never reflect on too much. I'm going to talk about Teresa of Avila and the interior castle and how a mystical marriage is what all of us should be called to or are called to as Catholics in our prayer lives, and especially as women in the church. Aileen Blakowski is going to talk about motherhood and homeschooling. And then finally, we have Father Charles Murray. He's going to be the celebrant of the Eucharist. He's going to be here hearing confessions. It's going to be an amazing day. We're going to have an hour of adoration together, time to pray, time to laugh, eat, reflect, grow in our passion for our Catholic faith and our identity as Catholic women. You don't want to miss it. You want to come. You want to bring your friends. You want to bring your daughters, your nieces. That's really an affordable day. So go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org and you can register for this conference or call 877-526-2151. The Women's Conference is going to be a great event for the Archdiocese of Los Angeles area, Southern California Catholics. You don't want to miss it.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Church of the Masses with Barbara Nicolosi.
Welcome back. This is Church of the Masses Radio. This is the show where we talk about the intersection of faith and culture. And I don't know that anybody else does that. So I think everybody loves movies and television, really. Everybody wants to talk about it. I was at a wedding not long ago, and everyone's just kind of standing around, people who don't know each other, and then someone said, something about The Walking Dead, and the next thing I knew, everyone was jumping in, sharing their impressions of the show. And I thought to myself one more time, wow, it's interesting how culture does unite us and bring us together. Even something as weird as The Walking Dead about zombies. Here we are going to talk to Megan Harrington again. She's joining us on the phone from Hollywood. Hi, Megan. How are you?
Hi, Barbara. Great.
Welcome back. You get to be a repeat. You have so much going on that we couldn't fit it into one episode. So Megan is a senior producer at Family Theater Productions. She's had a very successful project last year called The Dating Project, which got played in festivals and had a limited. I think you had a Fathom release, didn't you, theatrically?
That's right.
Right? And now it's still playing all around with discussion groups. I find people that are talking about it all over university campuses, et cetera. And then her second project was Father Patrick Peyton's, called Pray, the Father Patrick Peyton story. And it's a documentary about the founder of Family Theater Productions, the priest who said, the family that prays together stays together. He traveled all over the world. Some say was seen in person by more people than any other person living at the time. Really impressive person. So now her third project is The House That Rob Built, which is about Montana basketball, as I understand it, the Lady Grizz, right? So Megan hails from Montana. So here she is doing a story about her own people. So Megan, tell us a little bit about this story.
Well, it's a story of a young man, 25 years old in 1978. Title IX was just coming into effect in terms of needing to be enforced. And he takes over the reins of a unknown program in Missoula, Montana. He played there and didn't know there was a women's team. Mm-hmm. And these girls had not really been coached like athletes before. And they're from small towns, farms, and reservations. And he takes these resilient women and he makes them believe in what they're capable of becoming. And when he retires in 2016, he is ranked number 8 among the winningest coaches in women's basketball. Had 865 wins and had hundreds of women who were better and given more confidence because of him.
Wow. So you're doing, is this a narrative or is this a doc you're doing?
It's a doc.
It's a documentary. So and that's good, because whenever you're going to do anything that's sweeping, you know, we're talking decades, you just got to do it as a doc. It's so hard to do as a feature without it becoming episodic, you know, just kind of hopping through time. So I'm glad to hear it. And also, you can get so much more information out through the doc thing. And after 3 docs, you have to quit or you'll never get married. I mean, I don't know what the...
I'm just blaming it on that.
You should. What do they say? 3 times a bridesmaid, right? You know. So you'd heard this story, had you growing up, or how did it come to you?
Well, I actually was fortunate enough to play for Rob, so I firsthand experienced what the benefits of that. I'm not in the documentary, but it's a story about little girls with dreams and being able to achieve those because you're seeing other women do what you want to do. And it was such a gift. I think it's a little bit of a love letter of how grateful I was and how important sports are and how important it is for sports to be in a pure form. Sometimes I think it's so crazy right now in many ways of just hyper-focused on one sport, that hopefully this just shows the beauty of what being part of a team means in whatever you're doing. It doesn't have to be sports, but whatever, to be a good team member.
You know, and it's interesting, you can't separate, at least in my mind, the story from the times also, in that we're having this Title IX weird fight right now, aren't we, where all of the victories of Title IX, it seems to me, are threatened by the transgender kind of thing, right? So I met a woman in an airport just this summer whose niece, I was heading back to Connecticut, her niece was on a team in the state. She was like number 2 or 3 in Connecticut, and she expected fully to get a scholarship out of her track and field running. But lo and behold, two boys showed up at the state championships, quote, identifying as women, and won first and second in track and field in Connecticut. And so she got pushed into not winning, you know, not even getting to run in the final thing. She just, you know, she was like sixth or something, but she got bumped out. So it was interesting because the woman in the airport was saying to me, you know, I'm very progressive, but what happened to my niece was horrible. You know, that she had been working so hard all the way through high school and that she lost. And apparently the guy who took first, ran track and field in guys last year and came in like 178th in the state and as a boy. But as a girl, he was number two. You know, so but the point I'm making is women's sports have come a long way. And you have a story about the initial years of Title IX when Selvig gets going, huh? But now we're watching all of that may be threatened. I mean, what do you think about that?
I mean, personally, I don't understand it. It just doesn't make sense to me. I don't have the right words. It's just like it doesn't make sense that if you're just saying I identify this, you know, to compete with women, it is going to be harmful mm-hmm. for women to compete. I mean, just compete with a man.
Yeah.
It's going to be more difficult in many ways running. That's why you have men's and women's sports. So I don't know the answer. I just know personally, this doesn't make any sense to me that would be possible.
Yeah. And yet it is. It's going on everywhere. And so your project, you know, by kind of elevating why women need women's sports, you know, what is the good that comes out of that? Because, again, it's an argument that we haven't had as a society for like going on 45 years. You know, I remember I'm old enough that I remember when Title IX came in and we had to make the case that women's sports mm-hmm. were valuable. And I went to a college where there was no, you know, the boys had teams, but the girls was all intramural. You know, we didn't have anything. It was all, you know, anything we made up. But and that was the case in most places, right? So then Title IX comes in and says, no, you have to give women these opportunities. And so it seems to me that your project is kind of really, really timely in that it's going to focus our attention on, yeah, well, what is the advantage for women in playing team sports, you know, on this level? So what are some of the things that you think, you know, you said being part of a team, why is that valuable? And in your project, what's kind of coming out?
Well, the value of being part of a team, and I think is really hopefully comes across in the film, is that everybody has a role on a team. And Rob, in particular, everybody understood what their role was. So you might have been the best shooter in high school, but when you got on the college team, your role might be different. You're not the one who's going to be scoring. Your role is to be the best defender. I mean, learning your role and understanding how to make other people better and how you do that, and it's not always in the limelight. You could have a championship team with – or you could play I think the Dream Team is a great example. They lost in the Olympics. Well, that's a dream team, and they had every great player. But does having every great player on one team make you the best team? It's, I think, when you understand your role, you work together, you're invested together, and that's something that's so invaluable for women. It's invaluable for men.
It's true, you know, and it's something. I think what you're onto there is a huge lesson that our society is very uncomfortable with right now. Right? We don't want to hear about roles. We don't want to hear anybody say, you know, you can't do something. And the implication of roles is that you can't, that you're meant to do this and not that, you know. And so everyone kind of just absolutely braces against any kind of limits, you know, being suggested even. But to say, yeah, well, you know, the body of Christ, you know, it says St. Paul says everybody can't be a hand or a foot or an eye, you know, but we need all the different parts. And then further that some parts are more humble, but their humble parts are still necessary parts. You know, somebody has to, you know, pass the ball off to the best shooter, right? You know, and that's right. A humble task and yet necessary. So I love this project for a bunch of reasons. I think it's, I think it really is hitting, you know, just like your dating movie, it's hitting at something huge, but I know you'll handle it in a very kind of with a light touch. That's your style. But man, there's two issues that this project is really, coming up against that are very much out there right now.
Well, God, I look forward to having you review it. That's always a nervous thing for me.
Have you ever gotten a bad one from me? No.
I just value you know what you're doing. So I do look forward to having you see this. We're in the midst of racing to the finish line, actually.
Sure. And you have a lot of the same people from the Dating Project, right? John Sipity, is he directing again?
Yes, that's right. We'll actually be doing that together on this.
Oh, okay, cool. And then you have the same composer, I think. Is that right?
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Very good. So good. So the team, I love that. That's very Christopher Guest kind of Coen Brothers genius, isn't it? We've got a group of people that work well together. Why reinvent the wheel? Like keep coming together again.
Great.
So that's great. And so, okay, now I'm noticing you have a support the film on, so the website is thehousethatrobbuiltmovie.com. And anybody who would like to support this project, do you guys still need support for it?
We do. We need support specifically for marketing and distribution. Okay. And it'd be a tax deductible donation.
Okay, right, because it's going through Family Theater, huh?
Yeah, and I have a fiscal sponsor in Missoula, the Big Sky Film Institute, so it could go through that avenue as well.
Wonderful, wonderful. So go to thehousethatrobbuiltmovie.com and support this project. So why else? Who's going to be the intended audience? Is it going to be geared towards high school kids or college kids? I mean, who are you really zeroing in on?
That's a really good question, and it's obviously the no-brainer one is Montana, but the sense of it is outside of. So it'd be parents, mm-hmm. it'd be kids who are playing sports, and parents.
Okay.
Because part of it is a generation. We don't go delve super deep into this, but topically is like it wasn't that long ago women couldn't play sports.
Yeah.
It really wasn't that long ago. You mentioned it earlier. To not forget that. I mean, it's a gift, and to be able to do that. To really respect the pioneers who came before. And then they built Rob's program, but those early women who put it all on the line and weren't spoiled with anything are such a great role models for all of us.
Cool. Very good. So the project is The House That Rob Built. And when Megan comes back in our next segment, we're going to talk a little bit about what she's learned and advice she might have for people starting out. So stay tuned. This is Church of the Masses on the Virgin Most Powerful Radio Network, and I am Barbara Nicolosi.
Welcome, Daniel. You're on the line. What's on your mind, brother?
Hi, I just wanted to share a testimony about Virgin Most Powerful Radio. I had a buddy at work who, you know, he's a lukewarm Catholic guy, and I wanted him to start listening to the Terry and Jesse show, so I kept telling him to download the app, and he kept putting me off. So one day, I grabbed his phone, and I downloaded the app for him. I went on vacation, and you know, I kept telling him to listen to it. He was kind of put me off. I came back from vacation. He comes to my cubicle, and he says to me, "Hey, man, I've been listening to Terry and Jesse's show, and it's great." And it's made a big impact in his life. The guy, he's going to weekly adoration a couple times a week. He goes to the mass in the morning. Mm-hmm. He's an on-fire Catholic, and he promotes the Terry and Jesse show and the Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Wow. Daniel, what a testimony. And I want to encourage our listeners to get those cards by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org and do what Daniel's doing. Go out and spread the faith by inviting people to listen to Virgin Most Powerful. Daniel, thanks for your testimony, brother. God love you.
You're welcome.
This is Terry Barber reminding you, there's a women's conference coming up September 7th, 2019 at the Sacred Heart Chapel. Mary Danielle Barber will be speaking along with Barbara Nicolosi. They're going to be talking about true femininity, be who you are. This is going to be for your daughters, your mothers. Every woman should be at this conference. And the way to do it is go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151.
Bye.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber.
Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Church of the Masses with Barbara Nicolosi.
Welcome back again. I'm Barbara Nicolosi. This is Church of the Masses. We talk about the intersection of faith and culture here. And our guest again this week is Megan Harrington. She is a producer at Family Theater Productions, and she... we were just talking about her new documentary, The House That Rob Built. Before we move on, Megan, I was just wondering if, because it's family theater, you expect there's going to be some kind of a faith component. Was Selvig, is he a man of faith?
He is a man of faith, and we did always, before games, prayed the Our Father as a team. Mm-hmm. But that really isn't, faith is, this is more true, good, beautiful, but it's not explicitly faithful.
Well, I'm thrilled to hear that Family Theater is doing that then, you know, because for years they wanted things that were branded so heavily as being for the Catholic market. And so I'm glad that they're trusting you to take them a little bit outside of that.
It is very much a secular story in that respect.
Good, good. Well, we need to tell secular stories through the lens of the people of God. And I think as St. Paul says, or St. Peter says in his letter, we don't always have to be talking about God, you know, but we always have to be ready when people ask us the reason for our joy, you know, or as St. Paul says, talk about everything good, beautiful, noble, true. These should be the things you talk about. So bravo. I'm very glad that you've kind of gotten them out of their comfort zone over there. I don't know if it's just you, but that's great. So, okay, good. So
I'm super grateful to them because to be able to finish this is so exciting.
Wonderful. No, it's very cool. And I love that you're also looking at your own life over and over. Maybe this is the formula for success, both for the dating project and for this one. You know, instead of guessing at what might be interesting to people, you're looking at your own life and saying, "Well, what's interesting to me?" and that to me is the gift of good writing, good producing, is not guessing at what's selling, but actually saying, "You know, I'm part of this time. I'm part of this world and this audience. And what do I have in my heart?" So that's a great kind of segue into. So you've been at this for what we said about 10 or 11 years now.
Nine
years. Okay.
2010.
Okay. Very good. So 9 years you've been out here working in this, and so what if you had to kind of nail a few things? Don't say the biggest thing you've learned, but what are a couple of big things that you've learned about this field that you're in now that you seem pretty committed to, and that you are you're making good strides in?
Well, first, I mean, prayer, being centered in the sacraments, no matter what field it is, but particularly here too, is really being as prayerful and mindful as you can, and that isn't always easy. I listened to a composer once. This comes to mind is he said, "Approach every film like it's your first one," and he gave that in a speech in accepting an award, and that really stuck with me because it's very hard making a film, as you know. Mm-hmm. They're grueling. They demand a lot of your life, and so you have to approach it like each one's the first. Mm-hmm. And also tell stories that you love, like you just had mentioned, because they're going to again take a lot of your life. So if you don't love the story, and you're championing it and you're leading it, you know, it's probably not the story you should be telling, because it's going to require so much of you.
All right. So you just threw three things on the table. Each one of them could be the subject of a chapter in a book. But let's start with the first one. So the pray thing. Now, you do that. You have a group of young professionals who pray the rosary in your apartment every Monday. Is that true?
That's true.
And so are these all Hollywood people, or do you let token non-Hollywoods in too?
We let token people join. there's no age limit. I mean, we have the patriarch. He's an older man, and woman. So it's all ages, and it's been a huge blessing.
Sure. Now, how did you get that started? I mean, you're on Santa Monica, a few blocks from the beach. Oh yeah, let's have Monday night rosary night. So how did that get started?
Well, it was Lent that we said, what should we do for Lent? And I was living with my sister, and we said, why don't we do the rosary? We grew up with the rosary. My parents, that was something we did when we were growing up. And it's such a powerful prayer and could be hard to say on your own sometimes or to really get into it. So why don't we do that for Lent? And it started at Lent, and it has continued.
And how many people do you usually have typically on a Monday night?
It can vary. And lately it's probably, 15 or 16,
wow.
It could be between 8 to 15. And if you don't have to RSVP, you just get on an email list. So if anybody wants to come, they just get a reminder that it's happening and come when you can. And if you have never been before and been on the email list for 8 years, it doesn't matter. There's no RSVP, just show up if you can.
Wonderful. I love that, because you really are putting your money where your mouth is. You're doing a documentary called Pray, and you're telling people they need to pray, and you're doing it. So that's amazing. All right. So number two, this thing about make every film as if it was your first. So what does that mean, really?
Once you go through it, making a film, I'll use a documentary. I mean, it is like grueling work, because you want to do it the best. You want to. It is so much time. It's so much of your life that when you get to the next one, it could be like, oh boy, I know what we got ahead of us. I know. No, the excitement, this requires just as much love, just as much attention, just as much as your heart and soul as the last one. Mm-hmm. And pretend like you've never done it before, and all the excitement that comes with, oh, we're making a movie. Just keep that in mind, that it should be the love that you had for the first one.
It's so funny you say that, because we had Brian Bird on, who's a very accomplished writer, producer. He's got a show called When Calls the Heart on right now. You maybe met him during one, right? But he said, I asked him, I said, what project are you particularly proud of? And he said, it's like asking a parent which kid they like the most of all their kids. He says, all of them take your whole life. They take your whole focus. And so you love all of them. And that sounds like very similar to what you're saying here, too, that the successful route is that you have to love the project, and you have to just give it your all every time, and not take for granted that you're getting to do this amazing thing that for most people is like going to the planet Zondor. It's like, how would I produce a feature doc?
Exactly.
Good. And so then finally, the last one is, what was it? What did you say the last thing? Shoot, it just slipped my mind. The third point you made. Here we are. We're getting old, Megan. Anyway, it was really great and memorable. But all right. So
it really impacted me.
I wonder if you wouldn't say something about, something that people don't realize about being a producer is that you spend so much time doing blank. What would that be?
Oh, you said details. Very, very, very much a detailed kind of deal, especially with documentaries and interesting features. I mean, releases signed, location agreements, insurance, just all the details. It's not just, we're just, going to go film and let's go to Montana and interview Rob. It's hours of work beforehand, not just preparing cameras and everything, but what are the questions? What are the kinds of things we need to get? It's so much preparation, so much detail. And the best way for me, I am so glad I started as a production coordinator and an assistant, because you learn how to make a film. I know I couldn't have done it if I had not done that.
That's wonderful to hear, because, one of the things I teach a class, I've taught a class in the past called The Elements of Cinema, and I used to bring in all different people, a director, a writer, obviously producer, but then it would be a cinematographer, a script coordinator, a music composer. But I would ask all of them, what are the one or two gifts of nature that you have to be good at this? And so you're saying detail oriented, that, if you're going to be a producer, if you're going to put your shingle out and say, I'm a producer, you better be somebody who's detail oriented.
or learn how to do that very quickly,
or find someone who can do it for you. but still, I don't think you can. I don't think you can delegate all of that. You know, that's what being a producer is, right? So, how about the raising money thing? I mean, is that something you ever expected that you would be doing so much? And it seems to me that that's a big part of being a producer too.
It is. It is, or finding people who can help with that specific area. Do you know, make introductions for you? But it is, and I've been really, I feel very fortunate that I've had people like Family Theater come in and put in to come alongside me in a significant way, because it's hard to make a film piecemeal. I mean, Rob's, we were doing as we could, as money went in the bank, you know, wasn't paying myself, just everything going towards the film, and it's harder when you can actually get the funds to make the film and focus on the film. It's a game changer. And that'd be one of the things too. Nothing is real until money is in the bank. I mean, you need money to make a film.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I think that when I first came to Hollywood 23 years ago, we had a thing called the spec market, which was, you would go around to development, you know, people and production companies. I was a development executive, and I had writers come in 3 to 4 days a week and pitch me their projects. If we liked them, we would option them. I'd bring them upstairs to the producer. You know, he would buy them or option them, and then we would take them around, and then he would go to studios, et cetera. That whole thing is gone now. And so basically, everybody has to come in with a fistful of cash attached. They have to come in with their budget or with the project almost funded. And then they're basically looking for distribution partners. But the spec market, those days are gone now. And so how has that surprised you, you know, how much this is about finding your own resources to do this thing?
It was a little bit of a surprise on how much you do need to champion things yourself, or seeing other people also, like, well, I'm trying to get this off the ground, I'm trying to get that off the ground, that it really does help to partner with pre-established businesses or production companies who can help with that, who want to make the same types of films you have, but you're in a competitive, like you said, a very competitive market, and everybody wants to make their thing. So, you know, if you are gifted with knowing people or able to raise money in a way and want to bring good films to the world, maybe that's your role. Maybe that's your gift, is partner with somebody who makes the kind of films you like, and you play that part of the team.
I love that, make the kind of films you like. I think that, you know, the first and foremost, you're the first audience to the projects that you make, and you better love them, and then maybe somebody else will too. So, Megan Harrington, thank you so much for joining us, and Godspeed on all of your projects. And we'll have you on when the house that Rob built gets done, and we can talk more.
That sounds great. Thank you, Barbara. Mm-hmm.
This is Mary Danielle Barber. And I would like to invite you to join us here at the Sacred Heart Chapel in downtown Covina for a True Femininity Be Who You Are Women's Conference, Saturday, September 7th, 2019, from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Barbara Nicolosi and I will be speaking. It's $35 a person, and you can register at virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. We hope to see you at the Women's Conference, September 7th, 2019.
Jesus said to the apostles in Luke chapter 10, "Whoever listens to you listens to me, and whoever rejects you rejects me." According to Saint Boniface, in her voyage across the ocean of this world, the church is like a great ship being pounded by the waves of life's different stresses. Our duty is not to abandon ship, but to keep her on course. May our Lord help us remain ever faithful to His church, to aid and defend her.
This is Terry Barber. I want to thank you for your support for the Terry and Jesse Show. We now have a program where you can donate your old jalopy, your old car that you don't want anymore, and 80% of that profit will come right back to the Terry and Jesse Show. You just call 855-500-7433. Tell them you want to donate your car to the Catholic Resource Center, and that will support us. Call 855-500-7433. Thank you, and God love you.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Church of the Masses with Barbara Nicolosi.
Hello, welcome back. This is Church of the Masses. My name is Barbara Nicolosi. I am a PhD in creative writing from Bath Spa University in England, and I'm a screenwriter. And I am a professor of scripts, script writing at Regent University. So kind of bring a weird perspective. Also, I'm a committed Catholic. So we talk here about movies and culture, television and media from a Catholic lens. This segment of the hour, we always do movie reviews whenever there's something that is reviewable, and my producer and I, my producer Hannah, hi Hannah, she's out there somewhere, always kind of struggle to find something worth reviewing. There's so much in the theaters that I just don't even want to talk about. I don't want to make myself see. I used to go to everything because I was the reviewer for the National Catholic Register a little bit, and then the Ligurian. I wrote for Ligurian for 4 years, and I had to have movies every month, and it was grueling to find things, and I called myself sewer inspector for the people of God. So we're in a similar state right now. We're at the end of the summer season, kind of looking up. There's 1 month left to summer, and it's just this, we're awash in kind of loud, action-oriented nonsense at the movie theaters, unfortunately. But I decided to look back to a movie that I saw last year that I loved, and then it's out on, you know, the good news about the streaming services now is everything is new and fresh all the time if you haven't seen it. So the movie that I wanted to review positively is a movie called Christopher Robin, which came through, I guess last, the same, about this time last year, and it came through Disney. And in some ways, don't mistake it for an earlier movie that was on, that had come out the year before called Goodbye, Christopher Robin. It's interesting. There was nothing wrong with that one, except that one was more about the family, the Milne family, out of which the Pooh, Winnie the Pooh, came. And this one is more featuring Christopher Robin as a character and a Pooh in all of the characters. Now, I loved this movie, Christopher Robin. And when I told my producer I wanted to review it, she said, I loved that movie. Now, what was it exactly? Okay, so the thing first to know is that Winnie the Pooh is actually a bigger moneymaker for Disney than Mickey Mouse. How about that? So Winnie the Pooh brings in $1 billion a year for Disney in his all of his ancillary products. He's a huge cash cow. So they shouldn't call it the Mouse House. They should call it the Pooh House. There you go. Right. So Winnie the Pooh's charm is that he is, he's kind of living a life at this pace of very slow delight and enjoyment of life. And so the story of Christopher Robin is that Christopher Robin's all grown up, and he's become obsessed with work, and he's ignoring his family. You know, all those, we see that type in a lot of Hollywood movies. But he's lost the ability to enjoy life in the hurry of and flurry of making money and being a success. And so Winnie the Pooh, they meet in a park. He gets lost and ends up back in London, far from where he is usually, where Christopher Robin used to play with him as a child. And they end up sitting on a park bench together, and there you go. And there's just lovely, lovely stuff in this movie. And I was so impressed with the diction, the language, the dialogue being so smart. And it's smart even as it remembers who Pooh is. So at all times, Pooh, the bear, says, you know, I do nothing all day long. You know, and it's like, but he talks very slowly and very simply. He's not a bright bear. He's not at all sarcastic or cynical in the way that so many of the stuff pointed toward kids today are. He's very kind of just loving, gentle bear, and they play it so well. But I remember thinking, wow, who is writing this project? And so I did my homework, and sure enough, the writer is director is the guy who did the movie Spotlight, which he worked on the script with Alex Ross Perry and Alison Schroeder, but Tom McCarthy. And so Spotlight was a brilliant piece about the sex abuse scandal in the church that broke in Boston. And we were all surprised because we thought it was going to be, you know, just a terrible rip of the church. And it was actually quite fair and quite beautifully written and very careful not to re-exploit the victims of these kind of wicked clerics in the piece. And Spotlight was beautifully done. It won Oscars. It was nominated for several. And so that kind of mind is behind this movie, Christopher Robin. So just right away, know that it's going to be very clever without being cynical. They really know their topic here. And so what they're juxtaposing is the world of the harried world of you know, trying to make it and trying to be a success and trying to suck the most you can out of life is being juxtaposed to Winnie the Pooh's world, where it's about enjoying very quiet, calm, simple pleasures of friendship, and that's enough. A beautiful day, and so it's just kind of very charming. It makes you look at yourself again, but you can't stop smiling in this movie. Part of that is the performances are amazing. So we have Jim Cummings here playing both Pooh and Tigger. Then Piglet is by Nick Mohammed, who's a British comedian. Eeyore is played just hysterically by Brad Garrett, who was the brother on Everybody Loves Raymond, if you're familiar with that television show. And he just does a great, great job. But all of them are beautifully realized. So it's very charming. And, you know, Disney sometimes make things too saccharine or too on the nose. They let the filmmakers here do their thing without trying to make it commercial. This is not a pitch to sell Winnie the Pooh toys. And yet you come out of it wanting a Pooh bear to have, because it reminds you of, you know, that in childhood, simplicity is delightful. And that kids today, maybe by throwing so much at them and think overstimulation, when you look at children's media on television or in the movies, their whole emphasis is on overstimulating the kids, giving them so much to look at, bright colors, sounds, constant movement, that the kids get very bored when things are quieter, gentler, calmer. They've lost the ability to just be present to, like, a butterfly, just a butterfly on the breeze, you know. And so I think that this movie makes that point, that overstimulation doesn't mean a meaningful life. It might just mean that you've become part of the thing that you're trying to escape from. And that is going to be a futile pursuit, because you can't ultimately escape from yourself. So I love this film. Everything in it is just lovely and well done. Ewan McGregor as the lead is first annoying, and then you're really, really rooting for him. So I recommend strongly Christopher Robin, which, again, it was a Disney movie from last year, but you can certainly find it on some of the streaming services. And I know Disney is going to be launching their own streaming service, so if nothing worse else, you can find it there eventually. But I'm sure it's out there on a few others. One other thing I wanted to throw in about the, it seems like a very familiar topic, doesn't it? To a lot of movies have been about, this person's just trying to make money, and they need to rediscover what really matters. But the problem is, too many of those movies don't really know what really matters. And the charm of this film is that Pooh says things in the movie that are the kind of ridiculous. You know, in some ways, they're so oversimplified that you say, that's just too simple, you know? Life is more complicated than that. But the movie is calling us back to this kind of simple vision of childhood. It's not just about purging yourself of greed or the desire for money and status and things like that. Christopher Robin is about regaining the vision you had as a child, which allowed you to experience things like wonder in creation and over a little bit of honey. And allowed you to experience friendship. I can't say enough about how friendship is at the heart of this film. That the friendship between Pooh and Christopher Robin is the thing that Christopher Robin has lost, and hence he has lost himself. So the film really asks you to look at your relationships and say, okay, well, which relationships, friendships do I have? How do they tell me who I am? And how are they saving for me in different ways? You know, and so all of that is in this little movie. And again, very surprising to expect. You know, I didn't expect it at all. I went thinking I was going to get a Disney sales pitch to buy Winnie the Pooh toys. And in fact, I discovered many more things. So it's, it's not a textbook psychotherapeutic counseling session, this movie, but it is very much the kind of thing that if you are in the grip of a midlife crisis, or if anything, work pressures are pushing you at home, or if life has lost a lot of its delight, I think this movie could help you kind of reset yourself into delight. So I'm two thumbs up for Christopher Robin. Go find it, and your kids will enjoy it very much, and you as a grown-up will enjoy it too. So that's my review for this week. thank you, as always, for joining us. Please do check out our Facebook page, Church of the Masses, and let me know if there's a project you'd like me to review, or television or movie, something that you've seen, or if you have a question about something that's out there, go to the Facebook page for Church of the Masses, and we will try to address it on air. In the meantime, thank you very much for tuning in. My name is Barbara Nicolosi, and this is Church of the Masses on the Virgin Most Powerful Radio Network. Thank you very much.
St. Faustina's Prayer for Priests. O my Jesus, I beg thee on behalf of the whole Church, grant it love and the light of thy Spirit, and give power to the words of priests, so that hardened hearts might be brought to repentance and return to Thee, O Lord. Lord, give us holy priests. Thou Thyself maintain them in holiness. O Divine and Great High Priest, may the power of Thy mercy accompany them everywhere, and protect them from the devil's traps and snares, which are continually being set for the souls of priests. May the power of thy mercy, O Lord, shatter and bring to naught all that might tarnish the sanctity of priests. For thou canst do all things. Amen. Virgin most powerful, pray for us.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.